There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is not a real election ad. KJ and Lyons bring forth a new nation in sports talk entertainment. A show that believes in appealing to the super smart down to the guy who still acts like a 10th grader.
I'm letting you know that I'm a damn werewolf.
The show that can tie everyday life and Boston sports like no other.
It's high-end stuff, KJ.
This election season, vote KJ and Lyons. A show for the people. By the people.
Yes, KJ and Lyons can.
KJ and Lyons are doing a heck of a job.
And yes, KJ and Lyons are bigly on sports.
Read my lips.
KJ and Lyons are the bee's knees.
Because it is you that KJ and Lyons work for.
I could care less about some kid in college right now.
You better care about him, KJ.
No, here's the thing.
Vote KJ and Lyons. A show for you, the people.
I'm KJ and I overdraft my account to pay for this ad.
This is not a real election ad.
This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons continues here on WEEI. Thank you so much for being here. If you missed any of the show, the Odyssey app is free. If you don't have it on your phone, the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, download the app. Type in WEEI. Go to WEEI at night. It will bring you to the KJ and Lyons collection of shows as well as the other shows you've been hearing during this time. Very interesting comments there from Juan Soto, John, at the end of the World Series. One, I'm shocked that he answered the question.
The body wasn't even cold yet.
Right, exactly. It was almost kind of like the gun is still smoking out there. I think the champagne is still being poured in the other room where he usually you would hear, look, I'm not here to talk about free agency right now. I'm just thinking about, you know, the guys that I was here with, the guys that I'm here with. This is a tough loss. We thought we could pull it off. And, you know, as that comes about, then there'll be more conversation. But he told you right away, anybody has a chance, including the one. Think about it. In the Yankees locker room, he is letting people know that anybody has a chance.
There's 30 bidders.
Oh, my gosh. If you said, hey, you know, look, I want to get through this season, have my talk with Cashman and those guys, and then maybe we'll, and then you may hear something from me then. That's one thing. But he's just like, oh no, everybody's got a chance. I mean, the Dodgers could have walked over with a representative and said, hey, here's our card if you're thinking about coming to Los Angeles. Come to death row. Yeah. So to the Red Sox avenue of it, when you hear Juan Soto say something like that, doesn't this feel like this puts the ultimate onus on the Red Sox to at least be revealed that they made a bid, whether it's taken or not, versus not doing it when this guy just said anybody has a chance?
To be honest, KJ, when I hear this, I have no faith the Red Sox would even come close to getting this player. And that's the way they've been operating now for several years. And maybe they'll prove me wrong, and I wish they would. But, you know, do you have Netflix, KJ?
I do. I need to watch it more.
Have you watched the comeback?
I have not watched it yet.
The reason I bring that up is 20 years ago, this past week, that the Red Sox won the 2004 World Series. And
right.
Think back to the offseason before that, with Curt Schilling and Keith Folk and A-Rod and all the marquee names that moved that offseason. Red Sox got two of those guys, but they were in. Like the A-Rod thing, they started that. They were the ones that almost had the deal in place. They were the ones that went and got Curt Schilling. They were the ones that signed Keith Folk. Now, there's so many big names that were available last year, they got none of them. There's several big names available this coming offseason. I have a little bit more faith they'll spend, but it's still honestly, it's at the point where any major signing they make, my first reaction will be surprise and then happiness. It won't be happy. It'll be surprise first.
So do you remember the dark times here, like when Carl Everett was here?
I used to love the way he would like twirl his bat in the box.
Remember when he headbutt the ump with his beak of his helmet?
Yeah, that wasn't so smart.
But that's the season that they went and got Manny Ramirez in free agency. And for me, that was the start of, okay, they went after someone young. They took him away from somebody who was somebody. When they took away from Cleveland, it kind of broke Cleveland's heart because they were kind of grooming him to be their next superstar after they had kind of gone through.
And that was the best player on the market, too.
Right. And again, the Cleveland team at that time is coming out of that era where pretty much every position damn near had a Hall of Famer there to make the attempt to win it, and they had been breaking those pieces up. And so Manny Ramirez was supposed to be the leader of that next group, but then he comes to Boston. I think you need kind of like a Manny Ramirez moment here with Juan Soto, right? Where it's like, okay, you may not have the pieces yet. That's still a couple of years away, but go get this piece now to make the statement that whoever comes is going to be next to this guy here, right? So in the lore of everything, when you move forward and Manny being Manny and so forth, but Manny's really kind of that first piece that sets things, while things are still kind of bad, he's kind of the guy that's like, I'm willing to come here when so many other people wanted my services.
And the interesting thing about Soto is
What a comp.
This past World Series, it's Ohtani and it's Judge, right? Those are the big stories. And that overshadowed the fact that Soto is a top 10 player in baseball, maybe top five. Like Judge and Ohtani might be the two best, but Mookie Betts was in that World Series. He's probably a top five or six player. Soto's a top five or six player. So if you sign
Soto
a guy,
might be a top three player.
Yeah.
I would argue Soto, Judge.
Sure. I would put Ohtani, then Judge, and then I mean, I don't know.
I would do Ohtani, then Soto,
then Bobby Witt Jr., and then maybe so. But point being, right, guy at worst is like a top five, top six player in the league, at worst.
Right.
So that's the thing. It got overshadowed in the World Series, but you sign a guy like that, that's a 26-year-old, already World Series champion, who is a top five player in baseball and will be a top five player for probably at least the next, 7 years in the middle of your lineup?
Maybe 10.
Yeah, and I know we want the Red Sox to get a righty bat, and I get it. They need some more right-handed hitting.
Oh, did you say that?
He's the type of guy. Well, they do. But he's the type of guy that is so transcendent, it doesn't matter if he's standing straight in front of the plate. That's a guy that you want in the middle of your lineup for years. And you mentioned the star power thing. It gives you star power. Maybe it attracts other guys to want to come play here as well. But no matter what, think about it. The Red Sox missed the playoffs by, 6 or 7 games this year? I don't know off the top of my head.
Oh, mentally, they were gone in the
But you don't think
September.
Juan Soto would make that difference? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no, because Juan Soto can't throw. That's the other part of
but
it.
But he would make
he
up a big
pitch.
Part of that. And still, pitching is their biggest need. I agree. But,
again,
this goes back to the conversation, and you and I have said this probably a dozen times right here on the station. The Red Sox are one of those rare teams that can do both if they want to. They can build from within, and they can sign multiple high-end free agents or trade for multiple high-end pieces if they want to. They've done it before, and they've won championships. They've chosen not to do it the last few years. If they change their mind and they start to do that again, they can get Soto. They could sign Max Fried or Jack Flaherty on top of it, and all of a sudden, boom,
you
have a legit team. But I shouldn't be, because they're capable of doing it.
Because here's what you know is going to happen, and if it
they're
does
happen. Sign neither one of them.
Well, no.
They'll sign Flaherty.
Well, here's what I would think that the Red Sox would do. If you know they're not going to go and spend for pitching, then the definition would be that you have to go spend for field players. And if Juan Soto is available to you to spend and buy, then you could justify why you're not spending for all this frontline pitching, because you know you're going to get, 150 games every season out of Juan Soto for at least the next 7 or 8 years? You could sign him to a 12-year deal. He'd be 38 at the end, and you still feel like you might still be able to get high-end production from him as a DH. So these are the things that you would say, okay, if you're going to spend big, at least spend big there, knowing that Rafael Devers would have some protection in the lineup.
It would allow Devers to not have to be the leader,
right,
too.
You could probably move off of Cassis if that's what you need to do and say, if Juan Soto's here, we can go get ourselves another. Like, you talk about potentially getting Alex Bregman to play third. Then maybe that's when you move Devers over to first. But if you've got Soto and Wright, then tell me you don't feel better about this lineup. If you've got Soto and Wright, you've got Devers at first, you got Bregman at third, and then you're still working some of these other guys that are younger guys that are coming up. Maybe Casas isn't here. You probably think Duran is still here. Maybe Yoshida's not here anymore. These are guys who I'm saying that are not here anymore are not guys that really bother you. So if you're still, at least for a couple of seasons, going to have to be that team that's going to have to beat teams 6-4 to win games and not 3-1 games, then at least have Juan Soto out there where at least you know you can get closer to that six number, or at least still have two more at-bats from him after a bullpen gets in there and might start blowing it around the sixth.
And I think that what Soto allows you to do is, right, you have Soto and Devers in your lineup. Then if you keep Casas, that's about as good a three in a row as anybody in baseball, except maybe for the Dodgers, right? Well, not except for the Dodgers, definitely. But
don't you think you would have to get rid of Casas if you wanted to get some decent pitching?
But that's what I'm getting to, right? So you could keep Casas and you have an elite trio in your lineup, or...
Elite?
Yeah, those three guys together would be an elite
trio. Casas is elite, or is he just
burgeoning good? As part of that trio, that would be an elite trio. I think you're forgetting how good Casas has been when he's been healthy. But point is,
I want to see 600 at-bats.
Can I get this thought out here? So then you can get either an elite pitcher for Casas, or the rumor that's been out there, you trade him for Vlad Guerrero Jr., and then you want to talk about a real elite trio in your lineup. That's those three. So that's the thing. Casas is a guy that all of a sudden you have flexibility with. You can keep him, great. Or you can use him to get that ace pitcher that you're referencing, which is what I would do, or get the Vlad Jr., that other piece you want as well.
Well, you mentioned the Vlad Jr. Who do you think the Red Sox would be more likely to spend the money for, Bregman or Vlad Jr.?
I don't know why, but I'm just, Bregman is the one that pounces into my mind.
Right.
Terrible.
No, but I just, do you know what I mean?
Instinctively,
I'm like, yeah, it would be Bregman.
Right. Yeah. So knowing that that's possibly the guy they go get, and then these, because you remember when they did the, when they were doing Devers' contract, and it was all a big stink, and they compared it to, and they did a comp on Matt Olson. And you remember the first thing they were like, well, Olson's a first baseman. Why are they comping him as a first baseman? And I thought at the time they were tipping their hand of what their future goals were for Rafael Devers was to make him a first baseman. Because if you feel like you could get better quality at third, maybe you go get it, even if you pay a little bit less, but you get another bat in there because you say, okay, Casas is the bat that you're still hoping for. Bregman is a bat that's proven itself, but in its later years, but proven itself. And then you could still have Devers, and then the room to go get a superstar to put in right field with Soto. Then you have some things, and you probably still have some wiggle room to get some decent pitching, but you're probably going to have to give up maybe Acasas or Duran in some type of deal to get some upper-level pitching.
I think another layer to this, too, and I think you brought up an interesting point. Like, if you, let's say you want to sign Soto, put Devers at first, and move Casas, I mean, how many times have we talked about all the infield prospects they have coming up? Do you want to try to move one of those guys to third, too, and then you have money, even more money to spend on another pitcher or something like that? Like, again, the Soto... Like, if they sign Soto, it's great because it's Soto, but it also gives them this other layer of flexibility that they could use to improve their roster in other ways, and I think it would be really good for the clubhouse, too.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. Thank you so much for hanging out. We'll get you updated on the Celtics score. They're back into the second half. Plus, we'll talk about Drake May's return to the lineup, potentially, out of the concussion protocol. But right now, it's time to trend with Zach Cope.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Patriots had their final practice of the week ahead of Sunday's matchup in Nashville against the Titans. Quarterback Drake May was listed as questionable with a concussion. Also listed as questionable were tackle Feridian Lowe, safety Kyle Duggar, and guard Leighton Robinson. Wide receiver Jalen Polk has cleared concussion protocol and was upgraded to a full participant. Pass take on the Titans Sunday afternoon. Kickoff set for 1 p.m. Celtics are in Charlotte looking to bounce back after Wednesday's overtime loss to the Pacers. No Al Horford, who's missing tonight's game for load management purposes. Right now, they lead by 475-71. Jason Tatum leads the way with 18, and Jaylen Brown has just tied him, also with 18 points. 9:30 remaining in the third quarter there. Another rough night for the Bruins last night. They fell 8-2 to the Carolina Hurricanes in Carolina last night. Brad Marchand and Hampus Lindholm were the lone goal scorers for the Bees. They'll look to bounce back tomorrow in Philadelphia when they take on the Flyers. Puck drop set for 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEI and WEI.com. More KJ and Lions coming up after this.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI. Good Friday to you. Thank you so much for being here. It's Patriots Friday. As Gerard Mayo saying, look, there's really no shuffle of hands when trying to prepare both Drake May and Jacoby Brissett in terms of the game plan. But I would kind of beg to differ a little bit because I think there are going to be some things inside of a package that you would have for Drake May that you would not run for Jacoby Brissett. Would you not say that, Professor Lyons?
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the mobility piece is a lot different, too. Like Drake May, and not that those were designed runs, and Alex Van Pelt has even said they're not really going to do design runs with Drake May, but just those runs against the Jets, not that Jacoby Brissett can't do that. He did have the big 14-yard scramble on the 3rd-and-9, but that was one time, whereas May's going to do that 2 or 3 times at least per half, and I think that's just a much different element as you're game planning for the Patriots to kind of get ready for and get used to.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many plays do you have where Jacoby Brissett rolls out, uses his legs to buy time? Like, it's usually like standing there like a soldier and take that hit, statue, you know. So I think Drake May ends up playing Sunday. I think it's one of those situations we'll know 90 minutes before the game is when you'll finally get the final in hand down. And this will be good in the sense that if you knew that Drake was trending along all along, and you were able to keep it to the vest, you forced Tennessee to prepare for two quarterbacks this week.
Yeah, and I think that is a little bit of an advantage in itself.
Right, because they missed that with Houston. Remember, Drake's going to be the starter, and we announced it 3 days beforehand, before you got to put your installs in and everything and stuff like that. Back when, like, gosh, what, like, is Mayo even thinking about the gamesmanship involved with that? If you know that you're going with Drake May, that's something you can hold to your vest, at least to give yourself a bit of an advantage. But I think this team, in terms of its burgeoning DNA that's being redeveloped, the culture that has to kind of retake some of the heat that it's taken off of Gerard Mayo has been Drake May's great gameplay to start games, right? Look, I'm not saying the guy's the savior, but if you have a head coach that's brand new but yet has a rookie quarterback that can get in there and complete opening drives, can go 60 yards, get the 7 points, that's going to help make your case about what you know, what you're doing. Same thing with Alex Van Pelt. Remember, the heat was coming for him, especially going away from the run game at times and so forth. If these are the things that are going to allow things to remain stable in the conversation about Van Pelt, about Mayo. I think the case is still out on Covington in the defense, but this would be a great opportunity for the defense to get healthy as well.
Yeah, and I think defensively, it looks like Mason Rudolph is going to play, but Will Levis has a chance. I mean, how the defense, KJ, have they made really any game-changing type plays so far this year? Like, not really.
Probably the closest, the fourth and two stop that gave them the chance to go back, downfield when they had to make
against
the
Cincinnati?
Stop. Against Cincinnati? Yeah. No, not against Cincinnati.
The fourth and two stop against Cincinnati was huge, too.
In the Houston game where they had the stop, and then there was a chance to go down the field, and they got the ball back, and then they went down the field, got the touchdown, but weren't able to get the second score.
So they've made a handful big plays, and I really only one involving a turnover, and that was the Kyle Duggar force fumble in week one near the goal line. This is an opportunity, I think, for them to force a couple turnovers and make some game-changing plays that way, because that's an element that, especially 2 years ago in 2022, Patriots defense forced a ton of turnovers. Last year, that number went down. This year, it's gone down further. Like, is that something that if they're going to eventually be a good team next year, the year after, you're going to want your defense to be able to force some turnovers? This is a week where maybe they can be able to do that a couple times.
Yeah, I also wonder with the trade deadline right around the corner on Tuesday, what player the deals that have been made already have been guys on the defensive side of the ball that have been moved. So that means they're willing to move guys on the defense. I don't know if there are more of those moves. Do you think there are any more moves on the defense potentially for the trade deadline? Or do you think, like I am thinking, that it's more going to be on the offensive side, maybe a couple of players in the receiver room, maybe KJ Osborne. Maybe if you're Houston Texans, maybe you put in a phone call about Kendrick Bourne after what happened last night. You know, you're really working with one receiver, and yet you're still in the playoff hunt. You know Diggs is out for the season.
But it's a good point.
Right. The
Nico
other guy,
Collins is
Nico Collins, right. Yeah. So you've only got Tony Dell. You've only got Dell there. And so you're like, do you go get like a Kendrick Bourne to kind of at least solidify that? I think Kendrick, you probably get quite a few calls about Kendrick Bourne because there are a couple of teams that really need to do something about their receiver situation and yet are still in the hunt, like the Chargers are another team that need to do something about their receiver situation. So do you think there are more defensive players to go? Or
so
do you
there's
think it's
one offensive? For me, and I hate to say this because he's my favorite player on the team, but it's Jonathan Jones. And this guy, 8-year vet, so he's been in the league a while. He's played in 3 Super Bowls. He's won 2 championships. He has been the best slot corner in the league when he's played in the slot. He's played pretty well on the outside as well, so he can kind of do both. And I know he might not be quite as athletic as he was a couple of years ago, but he's still, I think, one of the better athletes for a defensive back in the league. So he's a guy that can go to a contender, play slot corner, play outside corner, maybe even play a little safety, has championship experience. I think he would be really attractive to pretty much, and he can play man or zone, like pretty attractive to
maybe
any
like
contender.
Baltimore.
Kansas City, right? We mentioned
Kansas
how they traded
right?
Legarius Sneed last offseason to Tennessee, who is going to be out this weekend against the Patriots. But yeah, Baltimore, Kansas City, any of those teams, or if there's a team that suffers a defensive back injury this weekend that's a contender, like he would be a guy I feel like could go to any team in the league and find a role and play really well because of his versatility.
Yeah, but you think that moving him would be more because of a business move because he's probably the best player to get the best return? That you would move?
I think he would get the best return of any guy you move. Yeah, and also, too, like you have Christian Gonzalez, who's a really good young corner. You have Marcus Jones, who I think can be pretty good and is really athletic. You're still a corner short, but maybe they look at it as we'll sign someone in the offseason or we'll draft a corner in the second or third round and plug him in and kind of build our youth movement defense from there. Because that's the other thing about Jones. Because he's been in the league 8 years, maybe by the time they're really good, like 2 years from now, his timeline doesn't match up with them being
really
good.
And you wouldn't
want
to still depend on him with
the right. So maybe they're just like, get the most for him now.
Well, that brings me to an interesting point you just made, because if he is the guy on the move, historically this team, especially at that corner and safety spot, have been able to find guys.
He's one of them. He was undrafted.
Right. So do you think it's one of those situations where they say they believe, or do you believe this is a staff that still could coach up an undrafted or a low round draft pick, a fifth or sixth round guy? Are you confident? That's what I think is different with Belichick being here, being able to tell these guys to know, like he's had the best, he's gone up against, he's coached the best. So I don't know if you would still be able to get that risk reward moving forward with this squad just yet.
So I actually do at corner, because Mike Pellegrino, their corners coach, has been here for many years, worked under Belichick, and has helped develop all those great corners. So maybe it wouldn't be as a sure thing, if you will, if Bill
was
still here.
So the scheme is not too far off for your liking for what he can do?
It's not too far off, and it's the same guy that has a proven track record of doing it, right? So that's like, if we were talking about linebacker or defensive line, I would not be as confident. But because it's corner and Pellegrino's still there coaching them, and even safety, Brian Belichick is still there,
yeah,
I have confidence here because those are guys that have been here for a while, and they have a proven track record of developing some of these younger guys, unheralded guys, into good players.
Anybody on the offensive side, I mentioned KJ Osborne. I think he's gone, but I think maybe you get a fifth rounder for him.
I think maybe a seventh. I don't think he's that attractive for other teams. I mean, your receiver group has been bad, and he still had trouble getting on the field.
Well, yeah. I guess the other part of it is if you're one of these contenders and know you want to get somebody for almost nothing, your almost nothing could be like a fifth rounder, sixth rounder.
That's fair.
Yeah. You know, so because a seventh rounder from the Chiefs, like, would you really take that phone call? Or a seventh rounder from Detroit, do you take that call?
Or that was like the Ravens, that Diontae Johnson trade. They did a pick swap of the sixth and the fifth round. But if you really think about it, the Ravens are going to end up having one of the last picks in the fifth round, and the Panthers will have probably the first pick in the sixth round. So it's really like four picks maybe that they actually swapped, and they got Diontae Johnson. So maybe some sort of deal along those lines. Like, to me, the receiver I could see dealt, and I hope it doesn't happen because I like him a lot, and I think he could be a future leader here, is Kendrick Bourne. Because I think he's the type of guy that if he ends up...
I think it's because his contract.
And if he ends up being fully healthy by late December, early January, he can be that guy that, let's say, goes to the Chiefs and complements an Xavier Worthy and a DeAndre Hopkins as the number three guy and has a really good playoff run because he's in the right spot, in the right place on the depth chart. Like, I think that's the thing for me. I think Kendrick Bourne, if he's a number three on your team, you probably have a great offense. The issue here is he's your number one, right? Like, that's, and he's a great number three, just not an ideal one, but there's plenty of contenders out there that could trade for him, and all of a sudden he's the number three and they're in a great spot.
Yeah, if anything, I think the Patriots should probably at least go find out who could potentially be the future number two. That would be the one when they get here, but the future number two for the team, maybe, I don't know, maybe look at a Darius Slayton from the Giants. Maybe the Giants are willing to move off of him. Like, I think you have to start thinking about building that out, knowing that you may not be able to hit that wide receiver one in free agency because you've struck out at least twice. I will say that, you know, when you talk to DeAndre Hopkins, he was coming out of being a one receiver, but with Ridley and with Ayuk, you see that you've been able to offer those guys considerable money and they said no. So that might be something that you have to go find in the draft again. But maybe you go get a second tier guy who could be a solid number two. Start working them with Drake May, where you have the flexibility to pay the rest of that salary, say an additional $6 million for the rest of the year, and then it comes off the books. Or if it works out, then you can negotiate for them on a better, more advantageous salary for the team. But I think that's where they have to be active, because the offensive tackle, that's going to be kind of tricky in terms of who's giving up a left tackle. Because if they're available now, the other night I talked about Wills in Cleveland. Where are they going to go with that? But if Deshaun Watson was still playing right now, I would think that anybody would be available. But because Deshaun Watson isn't playing and that locker room has been kind of captured by Jameis Winston, I think they want to see where things go. And it may be like, you know, like Albert Bell type contract or Bobby Bonilla situation with Deshaun Watson. Just like, hey, you're just going to get a Bobby Bonilla deal. We don't want you here anymore, but you still get your money, but you're just going to get paid to not be here.
And who knows, maybe Jameis Winston could be like the next incarnation of Sam Darnold, right? A guy that bounces around, has a lot
Geno
of inconsistencies.
Smith, yeah.
Geno Smith's a great example, right?
Right.
Has some inconsistencies. All of a sudden, later in his career, finds the right spot. And look at Geno Smith's a playoff-level quarterback. Sam Darnold's played great. Who knows? Maybe Jameis Winston could be kind of the next guy in that group that bounces around, has inconsistencies, and all of a sudden finds the right spot, right guys around him, and he's good.
KJ and Lions, we wrap it up next. We'll get you updated on the Celtics score. This is not pretty. We'll tell you about that next here on WEEI.
This is not a real election ad.
KJ and Lyons bring forth a new nation in sports talk entertainment. A show that believes in appealing to the super smart down to the guy who still acts like a 10th grader.
I'm letting you know that I'm a damn werewolf.
The show that can tie everyday life and Boston sports like no other.
It's high-end stuff, KJ.
This election season, vote KJ and Lyons. A show for the people. By the people.
Yes, KJ and Lyons can.
KJ and Lyons are doing a heck of a job.
And yes, KJ and Lyons are bigly on sports. Read my lips. KJ and Lyons are the bee's knees.
Because it is you that KJ and Lyons work for.
I could care less about some kid in college right now.
You better care about him, KJ.
No, here's the thing.
Vote KJ and Lyons. A show for you, the people.
I'm KJ and I overdraft my account to pay for this ad.
This is not a real election ad.
We're back to KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. Missed any of the show, just go to the Odyssey app, type in WEEI to bring you right here as the show is going on, and then once the show is over, just go to WEEI at night. John, the Celtics, this is the concern that I had, is you get into these games where, like, does Charlotte really have the talent to score 42 points in a quarter?
No.
42 points in a quarter. Like right now,
feels like a little bit of that Indiana loss carried over, because the Celtics came out 15-point lead after one, but Charlotte didn't go away. And maybe
it's now a 2-point game.
Right. Maybe they're expecting Charlotte to go away and they didn't.
And so here's the problem with what's going on right now with just under about 10 minutes left in the game. You're now going to have Tatum and Brown continue to play minutes. Because everybody else is around, like Pritchard's giving you nothing. Hauser's barely, like that's the other thing. These are these games where I've said that, look, you need to see double digits from Pritchard. You probably need to see high single figures from Hauser or vice versa. I mean, Jordan Walsh is giving you more than Pritchard has given you in 21 minutes.
Right.
In terms of points. And Jordan Walsh is not even there to score. So when you're going up against these teams like Charlotte, where if you put Peyton Pritchard on the Charlotte team, he would probably be the second or third most important person on that team.
Yeah, I'd say second at worst, right?
At worst, right? So you should be able to play like that against that talent, and it's not happening. And so, look, I know I'm bellyaching about a team that's only up by, that they're up by two, but this is where playing all, you know, giving up all those points against Indiana and then exerting all that energy to come back because you just realized, damn, these guys are treating this like it's their NBA final. Now, look, now Charlotte's coaching their players up. The stands seem to be filled more.
That's
like
Charles
this.
Charles Lee on that bench in Charlotte.
Right, right, exactly. So you have, like, now the interest of – this is the time of the game where people should be trying to leave the arena and getting out of there and saying, you know what, let's get home. These guys will be back here tomorrow. Did you buy tickets for tomorrow? I'll be like, we can give them to our family members. Now you're encouraging people to come back because of – like I said, what'd I say? The worst thing that happened to the Celtics in this back-to-back series is play a close game and win and then lose the other. And it feels like there's a chance they may lose this game, and now you got to play super hard in less than 24 hours. This, if you want to be championship material, you have to – it's like pro wrestling. I know you don't watch it, but it's you bring the belt with you every night when you go on the road. Everybody's rooting for you to go down. This is going to be the one that they use. If the Celtics lose tonight, this is the game film they're going to be used to help sell season ticket packages for next year.
And I think we talked about one of the best ways to be able to handle load management is you get up on bad teams by 25 in the second half, and then you can sit guys down, much like they did against Washington in the second game of the year. Doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that tonight, obviously. So that puts more pressure on them to come out and have a great first half tomorrow night and really get up on the Hornets. Otherwise, you go into Atlanta on Monday night, your third game in four nights, and how much energy do you really have in that situation? And you're already maybe looking ahead to that Golden State game next Wednesday. So you really want to have a good fourth quarter here, obviously, to win, but you want to do enough, especially in the first half tomorrow night, that maybe you can get guys some rest in the second half tomorrow, because I was hoping they'd be able to do that tonight, and obviously it doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, man, they may still lose this game. And part of it is because, like I say, one of these bench players need to be in double figures. This is one of those games, and they're not. And so now you got Jaylen Brown out there playing more minutes. Look, Kornet's been active out there. That's what he does. But, you know, there's no reason why Charlotte should be within three with less than 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter of any game with the Celtics. I know that Mason, this is not any given Sunday. This is not like the NFL. This is your run-of-the-mill NBA pre-Christmas. You should be running through people like it's nothing. John, how was the Halloween for you? Have you made the run on the discount candy?
You know what? I haven't yet because I had to spend an hour after work today before I came here getting or taking care of all the leaves in my yard. So that was the fall activity I had to do today.
So wait, so you tried to do yard work before you came on the air?
I did do yard work before.
Wow. Well, you're like, not try. I did.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've picked up on. You do it piece by piece, because I know one time we talked about it before. You were like, nah, I'll just try and let them all fall and then just try and get them at once. But you do it piece, because I bust out the blower.
Because I have way too many leaves to let them all fall and then try to get it. And it takes like 2 months for them to all come down. Like they start falling in October. Last year, the last time I did leaves last year was the first week of December. So it's a two-month process.
Well, you know, with the warm weather snap that we just had. And then you're going to get the cold snap again. You're going to get a bunch of leaves coming off because they're not used to, like,
I guarantee
what November.
I'm going
to
do. I did leaves today, and I'm going to go out there Sunday morning, and it's going to be like I didn't do them.
Leave a rake or a blower.
I rotate, so I'll use a blower, and then I'll chop them up with the lawnmower, and then I'll vacuum them up with the lawnmower another time. So I have a little rotation that I get.
I was going to say that's a lot of steps there. I would just think like rake and then blow, right? Because you'd be like, that's the other thing. I didn't cut the grass before the leaves fell because I was just like, you know what? There's no more grass growing. So now I'm going to I got to bust out the rake, but I have woods behind my house. So all that stuff is just going to be filled. Now I'm going to hear rustling in the middle of the night. Plus that turkey buzzers get on my roof. Oh, geez. I'm like, what do I do? I put an electric fence up there or something like that? I don't know. So John, if you think people were getting tired of the KJ and Lions political ads, we're back on Tuesday night.
Yeah, what's going on Tuesday?
I don't know.
Big day,
probably,
right?
Probably, you know what?
Trade deadline.
Yeah. And those KJ and Lions ads will stop by 7 p.m., I promise, by law. When's the last? I think that's the latest you could canvass. Is that like 7 p.m.?
I think it varies by state.
Yeah, we can stop before that. Yeah, so I could actually stand to hear another one of those. Okay. Have a great weekend, John. Thank you so much again, Zach. We guys will talk to you again Tuesday. Here, 6 p.m. WEEI. See ya!
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.